action of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine.
Are you fucking with me?
I am
just disagreeing with you. In America, we have the freedom of speech, the right to disagree.
Any human being, anywhere, is well within his right to do whatever is necessary, by any means necessary, to protect his life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect the lives and property of those human beings.
54, Pierce.
Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything more comes from the evil one. Think about that. Even in the words you speak, there is a boundary. You don't need to embellish. You don't need to argue. You don't need to defend.
Hey, what's up, people? I'm editing this episode, and I don't have time to do it over. I just realized that two of the clips that I shared, I didn't share the screen because it was a solo episode, and I felt like the sound would come through, but it didn't. So you'll notice that when I say I was gonna play these clips, you ain't gonna hear nothing. So I just cut it out. That's about it. I just wanted to give you a heads up, and thanks for listening. I appreciate all of you. What's up, ladies and germs? Welcome back to the show. September 7th, 2025, about 7:45 in the morning. I was going to start at 7, but Julio called off, so I had to look some stuff up and all that. The summer is over. It's like 56 degrees, not bad. Good football weather. Today is the first Browns game. I'm pretty pumped about that. I watched some games Thursday and Friday, and then I watched some college yesterday. And I was going to do like a breakdown, like all the games, who I think is going to win with the spreads and all that. But I bet on some college games yesterday, and it was a disaster. I mean, I think every single, so I was doing like parlays, like 3-game parlays on FanDuel, 4-game parlays. Not only did I lose all three of the parlays I did, but I don't think I got one bet right. So I'm not going to get on here and try to predict shit because I can't. I don't know what I do know the NFL a lot better than I know college, but I'm trying to get more into college. I'm usually at work, but we're going to be working Sundays now anyway because they put us on emergency status at work. So I'll be working 2 Sundays a month and all the Saturdays. So that's why I normally don't watch college because I'm always working. But pretty excited about the game today. So I had a bunch of shit I had to do this weekend. And you know, when you get home from work, you really don't feel like doing anything, especially on Saturday after you work all week. And so I made plans to, I had to change my daughter's brakes, had to cut the grass. So I was going to do that Sunday morning, which is today. And then I started thinking like, all right, I'm going to be rushing around. I got to get up. I got to do the podcast, which I thought I would have been done by now, which this would have been a disaster. But I So I had the podcast, the brakes, cut the grass, get all that done before church, go to church. And then by the time I get back from church, it's almost time for the game to start. And I'm thinking about it at work, and I was like, man, I got to get some of that shit done today, which was yesterday, Saturday. So I did the breaks when I got home, man. It was, I think it was like a pit crew. I think I got everything done and finished within 20 minutes. It was amazing. That's when you start worrying, though. It's like, that shit went too smoothly. Something ain't right. You know what I mean? But it was kind of, I was kind of proud of that, man. I felt like I was in a NASCAR pit crew or some shit. And then after that, I got the grass cut, getting the podcast done right now. So it's only about 10 till 8. And we usually leave for church at around 10:30. 10:20. So, yeah, it's all good. All right, well, something I was looking at here. This article is talking about Stanford paid 35,000 people to quit social media. This happened right before the 2020 U.S. election. And here's the results. Says people didn't just feel better, they were measurably happier. Facebook quitters, 6% improvement in well-being, which I'm not on Facebook. Instagram quitters, 4% improvement. Depression and anxiety dropped across the board. Yeah, I could definitely see that. Says the impact was so strong, researchers compared it to therapy. Quitting Facebook, 15% as effective as therapy. Quitting Instagram, 22% as effective. Election stress cut in half. Yeah, because the algorithms all have political agendas. And we know which way it goes, too. Unless you get on Truth Social or some shit. Okay, people didn't stop using their phones. They just used other apps. So it wasn't about less screen time. It was about less social media. Social media is uniquely toxic. Psychologist Angela Duckworth calls phones adult pacifiers. Her advice, don't just rely on willpower. Use situational modification. Change your environment so scrolling becomes harder. I don't really have that problem. I mean, I see people that literally walk and look at their phone at the same time. I have a hard time finding, you know, I got a 15-minute break at work. I can barely find shit to look at for 15 minutes. I'm just not into it. I do have Instagram, basically for the podcast, really. That's how I communicate with a lot of people, you know, as you guys know, I share clips on here and stuff like that. But this doesn't really apply to me. I'm sure a lot of you probably feel that way too, but you all know people that are addicted to their adult pacifiers, as she calls it. And Stanford proved what we already knew. Breaking free from the algorithm feels like therapy. The world is noisy by design. Your focus is your most valuable asset. Protect it like your life depends on it because your happiness does. Okay, that actually was an Instagram post. I'm talking shit about Instagram on Instagram. Yeah, speaking of Instagram, I'm going to play a clip. This dude was a Navy SEAL. I don't remember his name, but he was on Rogan. They were talking about the book of Isaiah, which is in the Old Testament. And I don't have it memorized, but I'll just shut up and play the clip. Yeah, that was he said something about discernment, and I think that's more important than people really realize. You know, it's like a blessing from God, I think. And it's, I'm not saying it's like an audible thing, like it's like the trials and tribulations of your life, and it teaches you things along the way. I'm sure it's like a message, but it's his way of giving you a message, you know, like, like, for instance, most of the people that listen to this show probably have some distrust about the world and the government. You know, the corporations are basically the government these days. But, you know, like, to me, that is discernment. It's like so many people just go along with it, and they're all right with it. Like, they can't wait to vote, can't wait for their next election. And it's just like, to me, it's all bullshit. You know what I mean? It's all about money. And that's what Jesus was trying to tell people, you know, thousands of years ago. And like, I've talked about this so many times, JRTC, the Joint Readiness Training Center, which is in Fort Polk, simulated warfare. I've talked about it too many times. I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but it's simulated warfare. They've got what's called Miles gear. And so buzzers go off and stuff when a person, a vehicle, an aircraft gets hit. So the trucks and the choppers that were bringing our food and water kept getting hit. And so we didn't get any. That's just the way it was. They try to make it as close to reality as possible. And so a lot of us went like a week without food and very little water. And we were sweating our balls off the whole time. It's the whole thing is a 2-week ordeal. But I think shit really started hitting the fan about a week into it. And that's when we ran out of food and water. If somebody got hit, we would take their canteens, which were probably already empty, because like I said, we were sweating our asses off the whole time. It was pretty hot down there in Louisiana. And so, I mean, you're sweating, so you're already losing all the water that's inside of you. And they try to, these doctors try to say that 3 days without water and you're dead. I can tell you from experience, that is not true. And nobody around me had any issues. Nobody got taken away. And I promise you, I mean, we were trying to find water, and, you know, you can try to get it from the earth. I'm not going to go into all that, but we didn't have hardly any water for a week. And we made it work, you know, but the whole thing that got me talking about this was the fact that what it taught me was when we got done with the whole thing, I guarantee I didn't eat for at least 7 days. And the only thing I wanted was something to drink, man. I couldn't give two shits about food. I just wanted something to drink. And it probably stayed that way for probably a day. And then I started getting hungry after I got some water and stuff. But, you know, that just taught me that I feel like this whole food pyramid, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, it's all bullshit that the, you know, the Rockefellers created this educational system. They were behind medicine and they just wanted to boost the economy and sell more food. And I sometimes say that, okay, well, it's only here in the West, but really it's not. It made its way pretty much worldwide unless you can find some, you know, tribe out in the middle of nowhere, maybe. But I would say they probably don't eat like most Americans do, but I don't do that shit anymore because I feel like fasting is it's talked about all throughout the Bible. I feel like that's a way to cleanse your body of any toxins or anything, which, you know, back then they didn't have nearly as many toxins as we do today. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that shit that we went through in Louisiana, that was God's way of teaching me that, you know, I don't need to stuff my face 3 or 4 times a day. I eat 4 hours from the time I get off work until the time I go to bed. The other 20 hours, I'm not eating anything. I'm letting my body clean all that shit out. And, you know, I'm 53 years old and I don't have any aches and pains. I don't have any issues. To me, that was things that God put me through in my life to give me the discernment to understand that, because how would I know that on my own? I'm not a doctor. I never read anything about it. Something in my mind just told me that because of the things that I've been through, you know? And I just feel like it's a blessing. And like I was saying before, like, we've all been through things and seen things happen that made us start to distrust the government and the media, the education system, medicine. I try to stay as far away from the doctor as I can. I just had an appointment at the VA only to get I had to get another set of hearing aids. I got my ears pretty much ruined in Somalia. So they give me free hearing aids and stuff at the VA. So I appreciate that, I guess. But the only time I wear them is when I'm at home, because I don't give a shit what anybody at work says anyway. So I put them on when I get home, and helps my wife and kids not to get pissed off because I have to keep repeating themselves. And it also alleviates the ringing in my ears, which is, I mean, you get used to it, but it's such a relief when I put my hearing aids on, and it doesn't make it all go all the way away, but it lessens it and less noticeable. So that was a long story just to talk about discernment, but that's the way I feel about that. And speaking of, like, God, the Bible, discernment, and all that, another thing that I feel is how it can be so evident to me, but not evident to other people. Like, when you have this sense of entitlement that you deserve all these things and stuff, like, some of the people I work with are just so spoiled ass rotten. I don't know if it's because their parents didn't beat their ass at all, or I don't know what it is, but you know, Let me look at I had this. They try to teach you this in the Bible. All right. This is Matthew 20, 1 through 16, I believe. I don't know if I'm going to go all the way to 16. That's what it had listed. It's a parable. You know, Jesus loved speaking in parables. It's like a riddle. But it basically says you're not entitled to shit. I shouldn't cuss when I'm talking about this, but basically says you're not entitled to anything. So I'm not going to try to explain it. I'll just read it. Let you guys think what you want to think. Okay. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. I don't know what a denarius is. I'm guessing that's a form of money, old-fashioned dollar or whatever. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "I am not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. That's a pretty common theme with Jesus. And I could see, let's say that happened to us modern day. Somebody, you go to work, you work 10 hours, somebody shows up 9 hours late, but still gets paid the same. Everybody would be pissed. I'd be like, "Wait, what is going on?" That's because we've been conditioned to be that way by the world. You know, Jesus talks about how his world is not, or his kingdom is not of this world. And that's just one example of how we're being conditioned. You know what I mean? I really don't know what to say. I try to force myself to remember some of these scriptures and stuff because of that. And it's like, it's hard because this world conditions you to be envious, lazy, entitled, all that stuff. Pause it for a second. All right. I didn't realize this, but I was just looking at this Dr. Michael Swango. A lot of you guys might already know this, but I didn't. So the character of Hannibal Lecter was based on this dude right here. I'm not going to read it word for word because to me, a lot of it's not that important. Maybe I will. I don't know. But Dr. Michael Swango, born James Michael Swango on October 21st, 1954 in Tacoma, Washington, is a convicted American serial killer and physician who is estimated to have been involved in as many as 60 fatal poisoning of patients and colleagues across the United States and Zimbabwe between 81 and 97. 16 years. He was sentenced to 3 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole and is currently incarcerated at ADX Florence, a federal supermax prison in Colorado. Swango's criminal history began during his time at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine, where he developed a disturbing reputation. Patients under his care frequently died suddenly, leading his classmates to nickname him Double O Swango, a dark reference to his license to kill. His fascination with death and poison was evident early on, and he was known to ask dying patients about their pain. In 1984, while working as an intern at Ohio State University Medical Center, nurses reported that patients under his care were dying mysteriously, and one nurse witnessed him injecting an unknown substance into a patient. Although he was cleared after a cursory investigation, his work was deemed so poor that he was not hired as a resident after his internship ended. In July of 81, Swango returned to Quincy, Illinois, and worked as an emergency medical technician. He was arrested that October after police discovered a mini laboratory in his home stocked with arsenic, ant poison, and handwritten recipes for ricin, botulism, and concentrated cyanide. He was convicted of aggravated battery for poisoning 5 co-workers and sentenced to 5 years in prison, serving 2 years before being paroled in 87. Despite this conviction, he was able to re-enter the medical field by forging documents to conceal his felony record, including falsifying his criminal history to claim a misdemeanor conviction and forging a restoration of civil rights letter. After his release, Swango worked in South Dakota and New York, where he was hired as a resident in psychiatry at Stony Brook University, and worked at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Northport, New York. There he is believed to have murdered at least 3 patients, Thomas Simarco, George Ciano, and Aldo Serini, whose bodies were later exhumed and tested positive for poison. He also admitted to murdering a 19-year-old patient, Cynthia Ann McGee, by administering a fatal potassium injection. In 1993, his past caught up with him, leading to his dismissal from Stony Brook and blacklisting in the United States. Swango then fled to Zimbabwe, where he worked at a Lutheran mission hospital in Bulawayo. His patients began dying mysteriously, and he was eventually arrested and charged with poisoning 7 patients, 5 of whom died. He escaped from Zimbabwe before his trial and fled to Zambia before attempting to secure a job in Saudi Arabia using a false resume. In June of 97, he was arrested at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago while en route to Saudi Arabia, after the FBI discovered he had lied on his government application to work at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Facing the possibility of the death penalty and extradition to Zimbabwe, Swango pleaded guilty to 3 counts of murder, 1 count of assault, and various fraud charges. He later pleaded guilty to a 4th murder, that of Cynthia McGee, At his sentencing hearing, prosecutors read from Swango's notebooks, which described the intense joy he felt while committing these crimes. He was sentenced to three consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. The government's investigation included exhuming the bodies of his victims and finding poisonous chemicals in them, as well as evidence that he had paralyzed a patient, Baron Harris, with an injection leading to his death. All right, well, I don't really see how that. I thought Hannibal Lecter like 8 people. I don't see the. I know they were both doctors, but I don't see the connection. He found a way to. He's right though. Like people, especially these days. I don't remember how long ago he died, but like people love to take shit out of context, like. Like he said right there, he was pretending he was Hitler's dog, and he was saying Hitler was the greatest person who ever lived. Which me saying that right now, somebody could take that clip and make it look like I said that. But they do that shit all the time, man. The media, especially, they'll play a clip out of context. Like who was it? They did it to Rogan about what's that stuff called? They called it horse tranquilizer when he was refusing to do. They got mad because he refused to do the vaccines and stuff, and he was taking ivermectin, which they said was horse paste or whatever. I don't know enough about it. I'm not going to really get into that. And then it was during the election they did something like that too with they made him they clipped something he was saying about someone else and they pieced it together to make it look like he was supporting Kamala Harris. Not only did they take it out of context, but they purposely were being fraudulent about it. Like they clipped two clips together, not just took one clip out of context. They purposely put two pieces together. Now that's super nefarious, man. That's that just shows you that all these media companies are working for certain political sides, you know. Like I was saying earlier, it depends where you go, where you're looking though. Like Trump's got this Truth Social now, so I'm sure that goes the other direction. But most of the media has long been controlled by the Democratic side. I don't know how long this has been going. Usually the solo ones are shorter. I think that's enough. I'm ready to go to edit this stuff, put it out. By then it'll be time to go to church, and then I'm ready to come back and watch some football. I'm excited about that. Oh yeah, I was gonna bring up this because we're on the Ohio-Michigan border, me and Julio. And not too far from Dearborn, Michigan, which is it's like the largest Muslim community in the United States. Well, one of them. I think Minneapolis is catching up pretty quick with all the Somalians that they imported under the Obama administration. But I've seen in Dearborn, they literally have Sharia law, which is like, there's a lot of different examples, but the one particularly that I'm talking about, like if you go to this Taco Bell in Dearborn, there's two lines. Men have to stand in one and women have to stand in the other. Which is, I mean, that's crazy in the United States, but I mean, I guess I get it because it's all, I mean, why do you leave somewhere? It's like back in the day, I don't know about now, but back in the day, everybody wanted to come to the United States. Like when I was overseas, everybody wanted to come to the United States. That's why I wouldn't. Okay, my wife's from Thailand, but I didn't bring her here. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I feel like I shouldn't. I just feel like women would come up to me and try to get with me. And they would later on, it's because they wanted me to bring them to the United States. Like they wanted to get married like before I even knew them. You know what I mean? So, but why do you come here and bring the place that you left? Like, I get it. Maybe they're home. They're all from the same area. So I kind of understand. And it's also a religious thing. Anyway, it's beside the point. What I'm getting at is now up in Dearborn, the police badges have Arabic writing on them. Now the new ones, it came out in the news. I didn't just notice it. It was a news article. And I kind of get that too, because I mean, hopefully they can read and write English also, but maybe some of the newer ones can't. But I mean, you know a cop when you see a cop, right? That's pretty obvious. You don't have to speak the language for that. All right, that's about it. Any questions, comments, bitches, gripes, complaints, conspiracysoldiers@yahoo.com, conspiracysoldiers on Instagram, YouTube, Rumble, phone number 313-583-7646. Call and leave a voicemail or a text. And that's about it. Conspiracy Soldiers is going dark.